Hey there, everyone. This is Maddie Regis, Account-Based Marketing Manager here at Automox, and I'm bringing you another episode of IT Insiders, which is Automox's podcast that introduces you to the people behind the product. And today we're talking with Ted Harpott, Senior Systems Engineer, about his background, time at Automox, and since he's our resident Linux guy, we're going to be learning a little bit more about that, what that means. So great to have you, Ted.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's get into it. Tell me a little bit about your role and also the name that you would give our company if we weren't called Automox.
Okay. My role is simply a system engineer with a focus on Linux. It's my responsibility to support our Linux product and expand the distributions and versions of Linux that we support for the Automox agent. Primarily, I analyze new Linux distributions and identify what or how the OS package manager works and where all the system details need to be scraped from for that particular Linux. And then I add those to the back end and they will be recognized during installation and daily use. And we then call that a supported Linux. Since I started, we've doubled the count of Linux distributions and have a few more in queue just waiting for some teams to test it. And beyond that, in the role, I just do general system teams things such as helping add new software titles to the third-party catalog and assisting the other team members with testing and troubleshooting in their specialties.
So not important stuff at all. You know, it's definitely not essential to Automox. Yeah, it sounds like you're, I'm sure a lot of listeners are familiar with the third-party catalog and probably more familiar with some of the Linux terms you use than I am. But yeah, definitely a lot of essential things there. So,
yes.
And what would you call our company if we were called Automox, if you can think of a name?
So a different name for Automox, huh? I was kind of falling back on the old dad, the natural dad instinct of going with puns. And so I was thinking of something like eye patch, like the eyeball patch, except I think of the name being read as a singular pronoun, like eye patch my system. And then instead of auto, the Automox robot character, we could make a plushy pirate doll and call it something like wet beard or neck beard. We just have to make sure we don't call it eye patch with the letter I, or else the Apple lawyers would be after us pretty quickly.
That is very true. I actually like that a lot. I might be going back to my friends in the marketing department, might have to argue that we might need to switch up our branding. I'm a big pirate fan, so that's really fun. I think that's been my favorite idea so far.
Very good.
So give me some background. Why did you get into IT and what made you so interested in Linux, or how did you kind of end up in your current role?
Well, it's been a lot of years. It really started when Dad, who worked for the only IBM vendor in town in the early 80s, he'd bring home early household PCs like the IBM PC Junior and the compact portable computer, which was hardly portable, was about 30 pounds of dead weight, but that was as good as it got back then. Anyway, my dad wasn't using those systems himself. A six-year-old me was fascinated by the loud clacky keyboards and green glowing screens. And once Dad brought home some classic games like Centipedes, Mineshaft, or King's Quest, there was no way I was ever leaving those PCs alone. And then the fascination just never left me. I'd tinker with any tech that I could find in those early days and end up getting involved, and I would end up setting up computer labs at school or writing batch scripts for people who were happy to turn over the tasks to someone else. Skipping a million details because my life was very nerdy back then. To transition how I got to being in the career, eventually it did become a career, kind of by accident though, literally as a strange event in the middle of a cold winter night. It was, I feel like I'm storytelling here, but it was a January night of early 1996. And I was on home for my my freshman winter break. It's 1 a.m. and I'm nestled in bed and there's a tapping on my window, which sounds absurd now, but we didn't have cell phones or text messages or emails or chats even back then. And you sure couldn't call the house phone or you'd wake up mom and dad. So we just drive over to the buddy's house and knock on the window. But anyway, so I climb out of bed and it's my best buddy Dave from third grade. So I open up the window and he says, Ted, you won't believe it. I have an interview tomorrow at an ISP. And I congratulate and ask him what it has to do with me at this hour. And he says, you have to come along with me to the interview. And I go, that's not how interviews work, Dave. And no, I know that, he says, but those guys told me to come into the interview and bring anyone I knew who was technical and might be interested in a tech support job. So sure, why not? I went along with him and to the interview the next day and was hired at my first internet provider. It launched me into learning Unix and networking and internet services, leading me down the path that has spanned about 3 decades now as a career, all because of a knock on my window at 1 a.m. on a cold winter night. I mean, that and a whole lot of hard work, but it's kind of a random start for me.
I love it. Well, you said you feel like you're storytelling. I mean, that's what a podcast is about, right? So I think that's really interesting. And what made you choose Automox? Why Automox?
Well, previously I'd spent 8 years at a major tech company with nearly 100,000 employees, and I was getting an overbearing sense of stagnation and just kind of being a tiny cog in a huge machine. And I knew it was overdue to find some new opportunities and excitement. And some previous coworkers before the big company were had worked here, and so it was kind of on my radar. And I looked into it. I put in a resume, interviewed the job, and it was a fit. And now here I am. Another thing that was a big extra points for me was that I discovered during the interview that the position didn't have it on call duty, didn't have any responsibilities, which had been the only thing holding me back from joining the local fire department for several years. I was evacuated from my home, from my own home, for 2 months in the Cameron Peak fire of 2020. And so without on-call duties, I was able to join the fire department, where I promptly once again had on-call duties, just fighting fires in a much more literal sense than before.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so interesting. I didn't know that about you. So wow, you're IT by day and firefighter by night, right?
I am. Yes. It's a fantastic, fantastic experience. I highly recommend to anyone else who has the opportunity.
That's awesome. Okay. I've got one last question and then we'll wrap with our game as we always do. But, you know, you're the Linux guy, you're the Linux expert. So what's one thing everyone in IT should know about Linux, regardless of if that's their main bread and butter every day?
If I had to pick one thing for people to know, and this really applies to new people, because I think that's where it's most intimidating, is don't let Linux intimidate you. It's not scary. Stop looking for answers and just look. What I mean by that is Linux is full of text files, config files, and /etc and log files and var log and dot files in your home directory that applications reference. Almost all of these are merely text files. Go look around. Just wander. Go in these directories and look. Look at any of the files, use the grep command to search for strings in that file or all the files in the directory at the same time if you're unsure. And then once you find what you want, you can use VI or nano to edit these files and make your changes. But many of those config files have the instructions included in the file. So you can even just look at the most recent entries in the var log files. But I learned so much by just looking into that intimidating command line and just going directory to directory and looking at files. Even when I was trying to accomplish a task, I learned so much by being wrong and discovering the wrong answers and configs in my search for the right one. So don't believe them when they tell you that Linux is scary and hard. Just get in there and look around. It's a great operating system to learn by exploring.
I love that. Yeah, you got to learn by doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Cool. Well, I think that's some great advice. Let's hop into our last little bit here, which this is going to actually coordinate for everyone who's listening out here with our top vulnerabilities of the last decade bracket for March Madness. That's going to be out on all of Automox social media. So you can go ahead and check that out. We're going to focus on 4 of these vulnerabilities, and I'm going to have you, Ted, kind of have them head to head against each other and pick the most influential one. So Automox can fix all 4 of these, by the way. All right. So, so the first pairing is Bluekeep versus Log4Shell.
I would pick Log4j because that was, let me just say that the difference in Bluekeep is that it was kind of isolated to older versions of Windows. First of all, it was about 4 or 5 years ago. So it's not out there as much. I mean, hopefully, but it's old versions of Windows, and it was largely isolated to like corporate networks. People had the pro versions or the ultimate versions that had the RDP service enabled. And then Log4j is more prevalent because it was out in Java applications embedded within the applications. So it was harder to detect unless you looked into each one. You couldn't just go to a system and easily patch just the internal library. You would, at least in the early days, we had to go and grep into or search through each of the actual jar files and find out if it had any reference to it to know if we needed it patched up. So it could stay hidden very easily. And Java applications just kind of get copied and patched and moved around. And so it seems like one of those things that doesn't just disappear, and they exist on internet-facing servers a lot more. So I would definitely say Log4j was more of an issue.
For sure. Yeah, I know that one by name recognition. I can't say the same for BlueCube. So I feel like if a non-IT person can identify it, might be the winner there. The second pairing is going to be Chrome Zero Day versus the Atlassian Confluence Code Injection.
I would have to say Chrome Zero Day was more of an influence, a bigger deal, because it was, here again, I'll start with saying why the other one is less of a big deal is because it was, when it came out, it was on older versions of the Confluence service. So if you were staying up to date, it wasn't such a big deal. Again, it was, that one's over a year old or about a year old now. So I'd like to think it's been phased out of existence. And the newer one is, the zero-day one, which actually affected a file format, I think it was called WebP, and that was embedded not only in a very, very large percentage of the active browsers in use out there, but it was also in some 700 applications that it used that same file format, and that could be exploited with a specially crafted web page, which is, you know, it seems like a much easier target to hit if you're just an average user using a browser, which is a big, big audience against one of a million trillion web pages out there that could be maliciously crafted. So I think that was a much bigger deal of the two.
Absolutely. All right. And now for the final face-off, we've got the Chrome Zero Day versus Log4j. So which one are you picking between the two?
I would have to say the Chrome Zero Day. It was more recent. First of all, which is an unfair bias, but it's definitely more recent, and it is just across so many applications, so much harder to clear that up. You'd have to contact all the vendors and get all of them to update their WebP pieces. So as much as Log4j personally haunted me as a Unix guy more than the other, I don't think that's the more vicious of the two.
All right. Well, we'll see what everyone thinks on our socials. We'll see if Chrome Zero Day comes out as the most influential vulnerability, or if there's a different shakeup. But Ted, I appreciate your insights there and your expertise. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your wonderful branding idea around iPatch. Again, I do think somebody should steal that idea, since I think we'll stick with the Automox branding, but that is a fun one. So thanks so much, Ted.
Yes. And well, thank you, Maddie.
We'll talk soon.